everyone, and welcome to Talent Talks. I'm Rob Adams, and today I'm excited to be joined by Dr. Sarah Prince, Curriculum Developer for Training and Development at TI Verbatim Consulting, TIVC. Dr. Prince has been instrumental in developing TIVC's Coaching with Cultural Humility program, which equips organizations and individuals with practical tools to operationalize diversity, equity, and inclusion, of course, DEI, within their coaching practices. This initiative aims to foster inclusive workplace cultures by training coaches to navigate and respect diverse cultural contexts. Today, we'll be exploring the critical role of cultural humility in leadership, why it matters, how it complements existing leadership approaches, and what leaders can do to foster it within their organizations. Sarah, I'm fascinated. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this. So let's dive right in. What are the key differences between cultural competence and cultural humility? And why might cultural humility be considered a more adaptive framework in dynamic, diverse environments?
Yeah, that's a great place to start. So I'd like to start really by providing a brief definition of what I mean when I say cultural competence and what I mean when I say cultural humility. So cultural competence, which is really a knowledge-based approach, focuses on what you know. In other words, cultural competence generally focuses on really acquiring knowledge about other cultures. And that's almost like a quantifiable checklist. So you know enough to effectively engage with other cultures, right? While awareness is valuable, it can sometimes lead, though, to unintentionally generalizing or to stereotyping if we assume that knowledge equals understanding. Also, this sort of knowledge acquisition tends to suggest that culture is static and only needs to be learned once, right? We put that check in the box. When in reality, culture is always ever evolving, and it looks different at the level of each individual. Cultural humility, on the other hand, is about how we engage. It's a lifelong approach to understanding and respecting cultural differences. So it goes beyond cultural competence by emphasizing self-reflection and that continuous learning and recognizing the limits of one's own knowledge. So rather just mastering facts about other cultures, cultural humility encourages us as leaders to approach others with openness, with curiosity, and with a willingness to learn from their experiences. And really, this mindset allows us as leaders to adapt to shifting individual and cultural landscapes. And that ensures inclusive leadership practices remain authentic and effective at the level of the individual. So while cultural competence, again, focuses on what you know, cultural humility focuses on how you engage, and that's with curiosity, with openness, and a willingness to adapt. So in actuality, cultural humility and cultural competence work really well together. Cultural competence ensures that we maintain the responsibility to learning about other cultures, while cultural humility acknowledges that simply having that knowledge will never be enough. True inclusive leadership requires us to make room for the dynamic, intersecting, and individual nuances of culture in the workplace. And ultimately, the hope is that that makes for a more adaptive and, as a result, more effective engagement with our team members.
That's a wonderful answer, and it says it all so perfectly. So with all of that said, how does the projected shift to a majority-minority population in the U.S. by 2045 influence the need for cultural competence and humility in professional fields like business, education, and social services?
Yeah, that's an important question. So as one might guess, right, a demographic shift toward a majority-minority population really means, bottom line, that our workplaces, our schools, our communities are becoming more diverse than ever before. And as a result, in professional fields like business, education, social services, cultural humility is not just a nice to have. Cultural humility really becomes an essential skill for leaders. As leaders, when we embrace cultural humility, we are better equipped to navigate these diverse environments. We're better equipped to build inclusive teams. We're better equipped to address systemic inequities in ways that are responsive to individual and cultural differences. So why is that? Well, diversity requires cultural humility because a one-size-fits-all approach does not work in diverse environments. And that is because it overlooks the unique experiences, the unique values, and the unique challenges that shape how individuals engage, how they communicate, and how they succeed in the workplace. So, for example, communication styles, decision-making processes, and even approaches to feedback can vary widely across cultures and even at the level of individuals. Without humility, leaders risk reinforcing power imbalances, they risk silencing diverse voices, and they really risk missing out on new and innovative ideas because they might silence those diverse perspectives. So cultural humility encourages us as leaders to approach each interaction with curiosity. So that curiosity rather than certainty, right? So asking ourselves questions like, how might my own assumptions be shaping this situation? Or, you know, what perspectives am I missing? But by embracing cultural humility, we can adapt our leadership practices to really meet people where they are. And this not only strengthens collaboration and trust, but it also creates workplaces where everyone feels valued and can be empowered to contribute.
How can focusing solely on cultural competence lead to the reinforcement of stereotypes or power imbalances in the workplace? And what strategies can leaders use to mitigate these risks?
Yeah, so I touched on this a little bit in my first response, but I really do think it bears repeating here. So focusing solely on cultural competence can unintentionally reinforce stereotypes or power imbalances in the workplace. And that's really because it often emphasizes acquiring knowledge about specific static cultural traits or behaviors. And this approach, in turn, right, can lead to the assumption that all individuals from a particular culture will act, will think, or will communicate in the same or a similar way. And that can create a dynamic where those in power see themselves as, quote, experts, right, on other cultures, reinforcing, you know, boss-employee roles in a way that discourages diverse perspectives and authentic contributions. So, for example, if we as leaders believe we understand a colleague's experience based solely on cultural training or a single aspect of an employee's identity, we might overlook that person's unique perspective or their lived experience. And this can lead to tokenism, where individuals are seen as representatives of their culture rather than as whole, complex people. Additionally, a static cultural competence approach risks placing individuals into cultural boxes. And when we put people into those boxes, we ignore the complexity that is all of us, right? Those intersecting identities like gender, socioeconomic background, and lived experience that sort of create the unique person that is you, that is me, that is, you know, everyone in the office. And that really is important. We also ignore the relevance of culture on a given situation. So to mitigate these risks, as leaders, we should adopt a mindset of cultural humility, as we've talked about. And again, that's approaching each interaction with openness, with curiosity, and respect. So this means asking thoughtful, non-judgmental questions, listening actively, and being mindful of any personal biases or assumptions we might be unintentionally bringing to situations. It's also crucial for us as leaders to create psychologically safe environments. And those are environments where team members feel safe and empowered to share perspectives without fear of judgment or exclusion. So regularly seeking feedback from diverse voices can really help us as leaders further ensure that our policies, that our practices remain inclusive and responsive to individual needs. So ultimately, the key is for us as leaders to move from that mindset of expert or I know about your culture to curiosity, to one of curiosity, right? So one of tell me about your experience. And this curiosity should also extend to our own cultural background and beliefs. And that's sometimes an uncomfortable place for us. But again, we need to self-reflect. That needs to be just as much a part of the conversation. We need to reflect on our own background and beliefs. Because this approach not only reduces the risk of stereotyping, but it also fosters more self-reflection and challenging of personal biases. And that in turn creates more authentic, equitable, and productive workplaces.
I love the word authentic right in the middle of that. Authenticity is so important in all of this. It's fascinating. In what ways does cultural humility encourage continuous self-reflection and lifelong learning? And how can these practices improve communication and relationships within diverse teams?
Yes. So cultural humility is rooted in the belief that we never fully arrive, right, at cultural understanding or mastery. It also acknowledges that it is human nature to hold on to assumptions and biases that need to be consistently reflected on and unlearned to create a fair and inclusive workplace. And that is no matter who you are, right? That is just human nature. Cultural humility encourages us as leaders to engage in continuous self-reflection, asking ourselves questions like, how might my perspective be shaped by my own background? And am I making assumptions here in this conversation or in this decision or what I'm observing? And these are questions, again, that all leaders need to ask themselves, and that's no matter your background. It really has less to do with an intentional bias, and it has more to do with the way our brains work. Particularly at TIVC, we emphasize something called the ladder of inference model. And this helps all leaders understand and break down their decision-making process, really examining how our assumptions might be influencing our conclusions. So this thinking really challenges us as leaders to focus on, you know, the true observable data, what is really tangibly in front of us, and separate that out from interpretation, from assumptions, or from generalizations our brains might be inclined to make. So these reflection exercises over time can help increase our level of awareness and come to conversations more open and more curious, which in turn creates psychological safety, which will foster more open communication and build that authentic dialogue.
What practical steps can organizations take to integrate cultural humility into their leadership to create more equitable, psychologically safe, and productive workplaces?
I love a good practical skills question. I like to end with practical takeaways. So this is a great question to end with. To integrate cultural humility into leadership and coaching practices, organizations should really promote continuous self-reflection, active listening skills, psychological safety, and the intentional practice of engaging in cultural humility. And notice I emphasized or tried to emphasize the intentional practice of engaging.
Yes.
Intentional. So let's start with self-reflection. One of the most effective ways to start to move toward cultural humility is by asking yourself reflective questions like, how are my own cultural assumptions impacting my leadership decisions and my day-to-day decision-making? I think oftentimes we as leaders don't often have time or make time to self-reflect. We're just going through the motion. So this kind of self-reflection that I'm suggesting is kind of bringing out that initial level of awareness. This kind of self-examination helps us uncover assumptions or biases that might be kind of under the surface and can really help you realize how you're communicating, how you're delegating, and how you're supporting your team. Another essential step is strengthening your active listening skills. And I know this might sound like everyone knows active listening skills, Sarah, thanks so much. But as leaders, we should really routinely ask ourselves, am I actively listening without making assumptions? And so pausing and really thinking about that, reminding yourself, this means not jumping to conclusions based on cultural generalizations, but instead engaging with curiosity and empathy to understand individual experiences. And really, this sometimes can be difficult to do. We're all incredibly busy, and often assuming we know the answers helps decisions get made faster, especially as leaders. However, slowing down to actively listen to what your team members have to say can be incredibly beneficial for building trust and relationships between you as a leader and your team members. And that leads me to my third point, which is creating psychologically safe workplaces is equally important as making decisions, right? As leaders, we can begin to promote safety by asking questions like, what am I doing to build a safe and inclusive workspace for my team members? This might involve establishing clear expectations around respectful communications that I need to model as a leader, ensuring all voices are heard during decision making, and addressing microaggressions or exclusionary behaviors when they arise. Finally, I can begin to intentionally practice cultural humility in my leadership by regularly reflecting on the question, how am I working to ensure my approach is culturally humble and inclusive for all employees? This means adapting my practices to meet individual needs, valuing diverse perspectives, and delivering feedback in ways that respect individual differences. It also involves embracing the core tenets of cultural humility, which we've talked about, committing to lifelong learning and self-reflection, fostering mutual respect, curiosity, and partnership, and holding myself and my organization accountable for creating an inclusive environment. So by embracing these reflective practices and promoting open and inclusive dialogue, the hope is that leaders and our organizations can create workplaces where everyone feels valued, respected, and empowered to contribute.
Dr. Prince, is there anything else you'd like to add? Because I have just sat here and been dazzled by this whole conversation. So I'm wondering if you have anything else to help us wrap this up.
I hope that we just take away that cultural humility is an intentional practice. So I think none of this comes naturally. So I want everyone to be encouraged that there are clear steps we can take to sort of unlearn and kind of break that ladder of inference that our brains naturally fall into and really question those practices. And it does help us become intentional about cultural humility. But again, highlighting the fact that it does have to be an intentional and lifelong practice is important. And that's true for everyone. So not to get discouraged, but to know that it does need to be an intentional and lifelong practice.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your insights today. Cultural humility is such an important leadership quality, and I think our listeners will take away valuable perspectives on how they can develop and apply it in their roles. I really appreciate your time today, and again, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I hope we can have you back on for future conversations and just continue this discussion. That's all the time we have today. Alongside Dr. Sarah Prince of TIVC, I'm Rob Adams, and this has been Talent Talks.